Welcome to the latest episode of Global Class, a podcast where we explore the international expansion stories of the world's fastest growing companies and the career journeys of their globally minded leaders. My name is Klaus Wehe, and I'm here with my co-host, Aaron McDaniel.
Thanks, Klaus, and welcome to our listeners. In this episode, we're excited to welcome Bianca Martinelli, partner at Brazilian venture capital firm Alexia Ventures, and also co-founder of International Mastermind, a global network of professionals focused on international expansion. Previously, Bianca was the Senior Vice President of Global Operations at Global Entrepreneurial Community Endeavor and Vice President of International Expansion for digital marketing and CRM platform company RD Station. In our conversation, Bianca talks about the importance of having strong company values that can be universalized to have global appeal, how HQ can be an enabler of global growth and trust building instead of a command and control mechanism, how it is crucial to create internal systems for unifying knowledge and facilitating strong communication, why iterating and embracing failure are key in succeeding with global expansion, and how to architect your company to go global when you're ready, among other topics. Bianca, thanks so much for joining us today. We're so excited to talk about your experience and get some of your insights as it relates to international business. Why don't we start by going kind of all the way back? One of the things that we found with a lot of entrepreneurs like you is that there were formative experiences that really showed that there was a world beyond your backyard. And you know, some it's in childhood, some it's in college or after. And so we'd love to hear what you would consider some of those formative experiences.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to share some of my own experience. And so, yeah, I did have some important formative experiences that I would say shape the way I think about the world, shape the way I see different cultures. I think it goes all the way back to my childhood. My mom is a journalist and also was a travel agent. And so at the same time, we had a very humble, you know, childhood, and they gave us very good education, my parents, to my brother and to myself. But it was interesting because my mom was always planning, you know, these incredible trips to her clients. And I was really never able to leave Brazil until I was at college at 21 years old. The other very important aspect of my childhood that I think helped me become passionate about the international world is the fact that my grandfather came from Italy. He was an immigrant in Brazil. And then I got to study at an Italian high school. So learning Italian from the beginning, I realized at that point that I just loved languages. And I fell in love with Italian culture to a point that I, you know, whenever I leave the country for the first time, then whenever I travel, it will have to be Italy. So I think those two aspects of my childhood really helped, you know, and create that crave. It made it also very special to me when I finally got to travel abroad. And it was to Italy, actually. I did my exchange program when I was 20 years old in Italy and got to meet my family there, like go for full circle. It was so interesting. I remember before, you know, hitting the ground in Italy, Milan, I kept thinking, gosh, is the smell different? Is the sky different? I just don't know. And till this day, I actually, every time I visit a new country, I honestly think that there are differences in the sounds and the smells and, you know, everything. I'm very sensorial in that sense. So it's something that it's always very top of mind to me.
I feel this connection to you because my mother is a travel agent. Talk about an industry that's been disrupted, though, in terms of internet and tech. But I echo a lot of what you saw, and there were times where she would go on these cool trips being invited by the government, and I would be at home wanting to go. But I remember being in her office and needing to file brochures. And so I'd see all these awesome brochures of all these far off places wanting to go, hoping one day that I could. That's really cool.
Exactly.
Bianca, one of the things I know you're really, really passionate about, and I'm sure it relates a little bit to the story that you also just told, is economic development. So where did that passion come from? Maybe just to kind of reflect a bit on where my passion for economic development came from was when I was in Chile. And I saw that the world was very different from Denmark, which is very much a welfare state, not a lot of poverty. But then when I went into Plaza de Animas in Santiago, Chile, I saw homeless people laying on the streets and on the staircases down to the metro, et cetera. This really had that, you know, impact on me in terms of the way that I also view the world and the importance of economic development that then also led me down to the path of focusing on entrepreneurship as that vehicle. what impacted you to kind of focus in this area? And why did you choose entrepreneurship and also investments as that vehicle to alleviate poverty and generate more economic development in emerging markets?
So I've always been very mission driven. I knew that from early days that I wanted to have an impact in the world. I really didn't know exactly how I would do it. I've also always been very pragmatic and a very good student probably in high school. And just when I thought of what did I want to do when I grew up, I always thought that whatever impact that I would have, I would need to leverage people. It was at a time when I was considering either going to advertising or to business. And when I saw the role of the CEO there, I thought, you know what? I want to be that person. I want to be able to be a leader who can move, you know, an organization and a mission towards something bigger. So I knew from that moment that business was going to be my degree. When I started college, everyone back in Brazil in early 2000s, everyone who was studying with me wanted to either go to a bank or to a multinational company. And back then I thought, okay, so then maybe it's not a bank. It's not for me. I want to go to a multinational company. I actually did end up working at Procter & Gamble for a while, which was a very also formative experience, super interesting. But somehow it also, for me, I was such a small part of a chain that already existed. I thought, gosh, it's not that just yet. It wasn't until I met someone who was working at this small organization called Endeavor that I realized what my calling was and where I felt that I belonged. So Endeavor is an organization still very small at that point in Brazil and was present in Latin America, but only a few countries. And there it was, this concept of first entrepreneurship. What was that? I didn't even realize when I was in school, when I was in college, that entrepreneurship was an option, quite frankly. And there it was Endeavor saying, you know, well, back in the 90s, entrepreneurship was not even in the dictionary. So we're here trying to change that and to make this aspirational. And then when I unpacked that, I realized that through entrepreneurship, through backing the best entrepreneurs, especially in emerging markets, right, having grown up in Brazil and seeing a lot of poverty, I realized that that was the kind of aspiration that I had in my early childhood, and that was making it tangible. Okay, that is it. It's actually moving people and organizations towards a mission and then having a broader impact. That to me just spoke so highly. It became my personal, to be honest, my personal mission. Like I knew from that moment on that whatever I would do with my life and my career, it would be in this intersection of entrepreneurship and economic development.
That's awesome. So you started to talk a little bit about Endeavor. Would love to speak a little bit more about it. I mean, it's in the research that Klaus and I have done for Global Class, we kept coming up across people who were part of the Endeavor ecosystem, and maybe something a lot of our listeners are not familiar with, but it's definitely been a fantastic catalyst, in particular through Latin America, for developing entrepreneurs and some really great companies. So I would love to hear a little bit more about.
Yeah, Endeavor is a global organization supporting high-impact entrepreneurs, right? So it started back in 1997 in Latin America, founded by two Americans who, quite frankly, so they wanted to impact the world. They were in Argentina and Chile back then. They saw that first there was a lack of trust in that ecosystem, and coming from the US, that was very clear to them. And then the second thing, again, as I mentioned, Linda Rottenberg, the co-founder and CEO of Endeavor, always goes back to the concept like emprendedor or reemprendedores, which is entrepreneur in Spanish and in Portuguese, was not even in the dictionary. And culturally speaking, everyone thought that the business people were actually the greedy ones. And, you know, so no one wanted to be a business person, right? So there needed to be a concept around it. So back in 1997, they created this organization that would support the best entrepreneurs in whichever industries they were in, and by giving them access to talent, to mentorship, to capital, right? And from that moment on, the organization started growing, and it's really a network effect. It's truly mind-blowing what Endeavor has been able to create in its 25 plus years. It's now in 40 countries and all continents of the world, all underserved markets, right? So every underserved market in terms of entrepreneurship, access to capital, to talent, Endeavor is there playing a role and being able to move the needle and by supporting these founders. So I've been very lucky to be a part of this organization, starting in Brazil when it was still very small. And I've seen actually the impact that it had in my country. It's a long-term game, as it is, I would say, any economic development project and strategy. You have to wait at least a decade to start seeing the results of the plant, the seeds that you have planted. But it's super interesting. And we can talk about the tech ecosystems in different emerging markets that I've seen throughout the world. But having seen from the ground up, and then when I moved to New York from the headquarters perspective and compare different emerging markets development, that has been a privilege, I would say.
Yeah, I think Endeavor is a highly impressive organization. And since obviously the 90s, they've had a lot of impact in developing economies, in particular in Latin America, but obviously also around the world. I think one of the interesting aspects with the organization is not just the focus on developing entrepreneurs, but also globally minded leaders by building this global network. So kind of the type of leader that we have coined in our book called an intrapreneur. You know, how important do you think, you know, that global network and global perspective and sort of the access to other cultures are to entrepreneurs, you know, developing their business in maybe emerging markets around the world? What do you think it brings to the table by providing this network and education around that?
I think it's crucial to be able to look outside, you know, your own backyard. And I think Endeavor was born with that value, with that perspective in mind. So there they were, two Americans in Latin America, and they wanted to value that culture. They didn't want to go there and say, these are the American values and rules, and we're going to include them, and we're going to make sure that you have them. No, they came from a very humble perspective saying, look, we believe that we can support and bring some of those values to your culture. I think one aspect that was so incredible to live through Endeavor was the fact that it was a global mindset from the beginning with a very local approach. And for founders who have been supported by Endeavor, this has been incredible and just therapeutic in some sense. If you're an entrepreneur in Jordan, in Indonesia, or in Brazil, different industries, right? Or even the same industry, but you realize that some of the hurdles and some of the challenges that you go through are very similar, and you can actually have someone you can talk to and exchange ideas. Besides that, also having access to best in class. So Endeavor was always focused on emerging markets, but very, very careful also of curating high-class network of mentors in the United States, but also across the world, who could mentor and show to these entrepreneurs what was best in class in their industries. And it didn't have to come from Silicon Valley, right? Or like some of the very well-known entrepreneurship hubs. Some of the best in class entrepreneurs that we found came from Argentina, right? Or from Mercado Libre. Think about the example that they are, not only to Latin Americans, but to e-commerce founders across the world. So that global mindset with the local approach and the access to best in class and to people, a tribe who can understand you no matter what part of the world they are, it just brings empathy and it brings understanding to a degree that I think is helpful to any business, right? So I was just very passionate to be able to live through that perspective.
Wow. We have to tell our listeners that we did not prepare for this answer ahead of time. But in terms of a well-aligned answer, I think this is perfect. Literally, the subtitle of our book, Global Class, is how the world's fastest growing companies scale globally by focusing locally. Wow. And everything you're talking about empathy and having a global mindset from the beginning and the notion of best in class, like you're talking about, that's why we called this group of companies Global Class. Sort of playing on that. So that's awesome, I guess. And
wonder we're aligned and we connected.
Well, I think it shows how universal some of these concepts are, or how important they are, no matter where you're from in the world. You know, and that was something we strive to do, is have something that is universally applicable. And it's cool the way you outline that for an organization like Endeavor in particular, that's been, you know, so incredibly successful, and how those elements that you outlined are core parts to that success, you know, not just the organization itself, but also enabling others. So that's fantastic.
One of the things that we obviously talk about in the book is the importance of localization. So can you maybe share a little bit about how maybe Endeavor had that localized approach? because you mentioned a lot that that was important in scaling the business. Maybe talk about the different types of models you guys developed as you scaled into multiple different markets. I would love to get your perspective on that.
As I have mentioned previously, right, there were values that were core to Endeavor's mission, and they had to be present in every, they have until this date, to be present in every single office, every single new operation. And they are, you know, to be founder first, to actually be in a market where Endeavor can really add value. There has to be a strong pull from the local market, which I think is relevant to any and all businesses, right? For you to have the, that understanding that the market needs you. But having said that, once, you know, check the box that it was, that market was really a feasible market to have operations, Endeavor operations, then the whole process was very much focused on finding local leaders who could support that organization and having a very local team. Of course, the team in New York, which is very global per se as well, right, with a very global mindset, they would always go on the ground. Again, I speak on the past sentence because I'm not at Endeavor anymore, but that continues to be true. They go on the ground, they find those leaders, they set up a team that has very, very strong local networks and very strong local knowledge. And then the management of those offices is, from a KPI perspective and values perspective, all of the offices have to perform to a certain degree. And I think one very important point is also that the selection process for an entrepreneur to be part of the network, there's always the final gateway is global. So I think that it just helps to keep that bar high. But everything before that step is local, right? So you have the local flavor, you have the local team, you have the local programs and nuances to that. And I think there's a lot of, again, I talked about empathy, but the leadership team at Endeavor Global manages those offices very much, not by authority per se, but by influence and by, you know, just understanding of the local nuances that every market has. And it's always a conversation about, okay, what is important and needs to be localized and what is crucial to exist on a global level, you know, for every single office.
I feel like we're checking all the global class boxes here, and Aaron, I don't know if you agree, but check. And when you talk about building teams, you know, we talk about the importance of bridging between local knowledge and company knowledge. Obviously, the company knowledge, understanding how it operates, the inner workings are, and also communicating core values to local teams. And then obviously, the local team having that local knowledge and local network that the organization could tap into to be successful at their scale. Now, it's also important to kind of find that right balance, right? Because when you lean towards too much that local team and also focus too much on localizing, it can create some complexity in the organization. And sort of to my understanding, one of the things that you were focused on when you led sort of international operations was to kind of streamline things a little bit, because a lot of these teams were decentralized and independently run. So how can you ensure that values, data, and systems were aligned so you guys could scale more effectively as an organization?
Right.
Can you talk a little bit more about that and your responsibility to kind of streamline things at Endeavor and how important that was for you guys to scale your impact around the world?
So from a values perspective, which I think is very important, and it's interesting, Endeavor operated for 20 years without ever putting together a formal document that would set the values, but it was so strong and it was so that the management was operating so closely with each other. I don't know that was felt, right? That was there. After 20 years and 35 plus operations, there was a very important movement driven by Linda Rottenberg, the CEO and co-founder of, okay, let's put together the values and let's make sure that we're living by them and that we are talking about them, that it's becoming more formal. So that happened in 2019, if I'm not mistaken. And it was a very bottom-up approach all the way. So we sourced, you know, every single person from the team, the managing directors from all of the offices, the leadership team at Endeavor Global, all the way to Linda. And then she curated the final version and said, look, this is what Endeavor is, right? So let's live by those values. Let's start actually putting these values in every single thing that we do. Again, not to say that this was not present yet, but I think that it was a very necessary step once Endeavor reached a certain scale, because at that point, those processes were needed, but everything started with values. And then from a systems perspective, Endeavor has always used Salesforce, which I think has been very helpful. And even though those operations are very local, the systems, you know, the source of truth, so to speak, right? The CRM is shared by all of the offices and everyone has access to that global network. So from a systems perspective, centralization is important. Again, the system is very customized to Endeavor's needs and everyone has access to different parts of it. But it's very important to be able to unify, you know, knowledge and have everything in one single source of truth. And then from a people perspective, right, we talked about values, but one of the examples that I think is most important, and it's recent because so many people from Endeavor's offices were asking for this. Look, everyone who works at Endeavor has a global mindset, loves the fact that they are part of a global organization, but they're living their local culture, their local office in the day-to-day. They wanted opportunities such as the one I had, but I was lucky. It kind of happened naturally, organically, that I went from São Paulo to New York and started expanding Endeavor to the world. They would ask me, how can I do that? How can my career mirror that too? So how can Endeavor create a career path that is more formal and allows us to have that, you know, that those opportunities. So I think that streamlining that aspect too and being meritocratic and open and transparent about what are the things that would make someone eligible to work at another office was something we started doing. I can't say it's perfect just yet because it's such a decentralized model that I think it's a challenge to create something so streamlined and so central. But I think that these are just some examples of the balance that you must have of like the local aspect, but how can the headquarters play an important role in catalyzing the growth of people in their offices, right, in their organization?
Bianca, this is such an important point of, as you were talking about Endeavor, it's so core to the global class mindset, this notion that headquarters is really an enabler and supporter as opposed to some command and control mechanism that's telling everyone what to do. And I mean, what you went through is really important. The other thing that we think is really important, that's really core to the culture aspect is this process that you're going through as you're growing. So one of our previous guests, Gabrielle, co-founder of Rocket Chat, talked about how these core values are discovered over time, how they also might change. One of our other guests, Jan Van Casteren from Flexport, talked about how as Flexport grew, some of their core values had to change. Some things that worked early on didn't work when you think about global organization that needs to interact with each other. But all of it comes down to actually what you outlined perfectly of universalizing core values so that they are things that really resonate across, you know, in the case of Endeavor, you were saying more than 30 different locations. All of that is so key in core to things. One thing that we've been talking a lot about Endeavor, which is great organization, but what was, you know, really exciting for us to hear about and how we had connected is International Mastermind, which you co-founded. And a lot of the core of it comes from the way that Klaus in particular is good about explaining this is that, you know, in general, a lot of this international expansion has been a very solitary experience. It's everyone else is focused on the core markets and you're the one person who's focused on other markets, or you get hired in another market and everybody else is in another country, or you're the one person to go live in another market to evangelize the company. And so making it a shared experience is really important. And I mean, that's one of the core parts to what International Mastermind does. So talk to us about International Mastermind, why you founded it and what it does and why it's important.
Yeah, well, I think you touched on very important points and many of the reasons why we decided to create International Mastermind. After my cycle at Endeavor, I joined one of Endeavor Portfolio's companies, RD Station, based in the south of Brazil, and I was the head of international expansion. It was a super interesting challenge, but very different from the challenge that I was pursuing at Endeavor. I was, while at Endeavor, I was at this organization that was born global. RD Station was this Brazilian company that needed to move from a local company to a global company, and how to do that, you know, after they had already reached such incredible scale in Brazil. So it was a true challenge to me. And I felt very much, as you said, very much alone. I thought, gosh, how can I find information on how other companies have done it, right? How do they go about it? Is there a playbook? And at RD, we would talk a lot about playbooks. We created our own playbook for international expansion, which was always iterating, but I felt the need to connect to other peers. And I started getting to know more professionals who were specifically on running international expansion for SaaS business models across the world. And one of them was Anna Guzman, who was based out of New York at Squarespace. At the same time, I know that she was talking to Robin, who was one of the other co-founders from Shopify based out of Canada. And the three of us at the very same time, pretty much, were talking about this need for a network who could just share knowledge. And I came from the perspective of having been part of a network for a long time. Endeavor is nothing but a very strong network of peers. And I very much believed in the power of that. So when we got together, and finally with Alexia, who's part of Atlassian, so the four of us came together and thought, this is the moment. No one has done this before. Let's just create a very curated group of leaders running international expansion in tech companies. And let's start creating a curriculum, not necessarily a course or anything, but just a platform for these people to get to know each other, connect, and share best practices. This has been over 3 years now. Each of us lives in different countries, different parts of the world. We have a network that is expanding, but it's referral-based. You know, we don't want to grow it massively. We want to keep it something, you know, very, very close, connected group who can just share thoughts. And I think this was really the reason why we connected in the first place, right? We very much welcome the opportunity to interact with other folks who are running international expansion or creating content on international expansion and just starting to share an industry best practice, I would say, you know, just repertoire, right? that we can talk about and that we can go back to and create frameworks together. So I think that's really the purpose, and we're super excited with where it's at. But I think that we can do much more. It's just each of us is doing many other things also on this side. So hopefully we will have more time to grow it even further.
We're super excited about what you guys are doing because it perfectly aligns with what we're also doing. And we feel like there are so few resources out there that it's important to collaborate across communities, right? You know, exactly. Really our core mission, as Aaron sort of alluded to, is we want to make international a shared experience because it is isolated, unfortunately. And so kind of jumping a little bit back to those early days when you led expansion for that company, what were some of the key questions that you had in mind that you couldn't really sort of find yourself and needed a community to help sort of guide you? And did some of those questions also align with the business leaders that you then ended up speaking to through this international mastermind group? Can you share a little bit about that and some of those key questions you had in mind?
Yeah, absolutely. The first and most important was on strategy itself. It was, okay, what does it take for a company to really commit to going global, right? Because it's not something that happens from one day to the other, especially when a company that already has scale, already has values put in place, already has a culture put in place. How can you go about it? And what are the, you know, the direct and indirect influences that you have to generate to create that? I had a ton of support from the board and from the CEO, but I had lots of questions of more tangibly how to go about it and how to continue creating that momentum for a company that was just starting to go global. And then questions around market entry and selection of countries, right? We selected some countries in Latin America, but was I thinking correctly? What were the main metrics to consider when we were analyzing a market versus the other? Is it only market sizing? Is it, you know, our ability to actually localize in that language? Was it culture? We considered Asia at a certain point, but it was so far off for us, not even culturally, but also from a time zone perspective. So there were all of these questions. And then finally, on team structure and governance, right? We didn't know how to structure that team in the beginning. So we had assumptions, but how to go about it, what's the best structure to optimize expansion in the beginning? And then does it change over time as you evolve your expansion process? So I would say I had all questions and probably, and again, Whereas at Endeavor, I felt that we were born global and everyone kind of like lived that mentality. I felt very much alone and needing to be the person at RD station who would, you know, fight this fight. But I needed peers who could back me up and help me go about it.
There's so many great things about what you had just said. I think it's also really important to highlight what you talked about the importance of everybody in the organization, leadership in particular, committing at the start. Because a lot of fast-growing organizations, it's all about just moving and going and going and let's go figure it out. That step is skipped. And so it's really important to say everybody's on board. You know, we have certain commitments around things, resources and otherwise, but you know, everything you just said about country selection as well, you know, it's easy to think about economic indicators, population indicators, but the cultural aspect, and we found that a lot of the global class companies we spoke to leaders from, there were other criteria that were important that allowed them to scale quickly, thinking beyond just those normal things. And then what you talked about team structure and governance. So all of that sort of tends towards something that we think is really important, which are creating systems, structures, and processes to support growth. And would love to get some of your thoughts around how to mentally think about that and maybe certain structures that you have found that are particularly important that enable that quick growth and scalability from the beginning and maybe at different points of an expansion as well.
So throughout my experience, I would, especially at RD Station, I would say that it was so important to recruit champions, internal champions within the organization that could help you. I was responsible for sales and customer success, but I was indirectly, I had a dotted line to marketing and product. And so even though I had people in those teams that were 100% dedicated to international expansion, I very purposefully, I looked for, especially in the leadership level, looked for internal champions who could help me make the case and could help me, quite frankly, fight for budget and fight for resources. So more than a system, I think I would start with this idea of direct and indirect influence within the organization. And I think I couldn't stress this enough. This is important. And it's one of the most important jobs that someone who's leading international expansion has to do in an organization that needs to make that shift, that cultural shift. And then from with HR, I would actually strategize on how to actually build a program for language for everyone. How would we celebrate, you know, create some team buildings for the entire company that would celebrate some of the cultures that we were going to, right? So very specific aspects that will move that culture towards being a global culture. With product, again, quite frankly, and as we know, product usually has a ton of projects going on at the same time. So how would we actually make it meritocratic and would make it fun and interesting, or maybe tie one trip to a project so actually the product team would be excited to work on some localization, internationalization features. Finally, from a business development perspective, and I think one of the systems that was created back then was really interesting, was this idea of making international expansion something aspirational. Because everyone, when they hear about the fact that the company is going global, that the company is becoming more international, they think it's nice and glamorous. The day-to-day, the operations are, it's just very tough, right? It's basically operating in whatever you're doing in one country, like multiplying by two or three or four. It's very complex and it requires a lot of different steps to adapt the business to that new reality. So for the teams, we made it aspirational that once they hit a certain degree of excellence in a particular country, they would actually be eligible to be a trailblazer and help us, you know, conquer another country. So that was an interesting aspect, I would say, in a system that we created for people to really embrace more the cultural aspect of becoming global.
One thing that you mentioned earlier on that I think is a key enabler of all of this is trust. Can you talk about what role trust plays throughout this whole process amongst the organization?
In my experience, as I had mentioned with the Endeavor example, right, we would not be able to manage successfully all of the different countries if it wasn't based on trust, if it was just based on command and control. An organization is a living being, right? It's something that grows organically, like you or not, and it's made of people. So I am very much a firm believer that you have to, you know, the trips that you make to a country to actually, you know, explore, scope, to meet new clients, prospective clients, partners, the most important part of it is the connection that you make, is the trust that you build. So you have to make time for this, right? And it takes time and it has to be genuine. So I think trust plays a crucial role and it has to be the backbone of everything that you're doing with expansion. Otherwise, people will just not commit, quite frankly. Like, you can have KPIs, you can have everything around it. Of course, it helps and helps if your budget and your strategic KPIs are aligned to that. But in my experience, nothing beats having built that trust to be able to execute successfully on expansion. And again, we talked about empathy. That's another concept. But you have to almost go from a perspective of listening and unlearning to learn something new. And I think that's one of the other aspects that I love about expansion, that it's always, you're always being encouraged to put yourself on someone else's shoes and learn something new.
That's really, really fascinating. And what Aaron and I talk a lot about is really having that sort of culture curiosity when you step into international markets, because you can't just go the company way of doing things. You have to go the local way of doing things. And that's really about relearning. I wanted to talk a little bit more about the trust element, right? Because a little bit at a higher level in terms of comments, maybe put it in a bit more of a practical, I guess, a layer, meaning that how do you actually facilitate and build trust within the organization? What were some of the things that you did in terms of building these relationships within the organization that then allowed you to grant autonomy and trust, you know, the expansion efforts in the markets that you guys were expanding to? What were some of the things that you did to kind of build that trust up within the organization?
Something that comes to mind is building advisory boards or committees, or, you know, choosing people from different teams to be part of the decision-making process around expansion. So I think that this, both for Endeavor and for RD Station, was a crucial part of building that trust and inviting people over to be part of the process, right? Rather than just communicating and having them stand by and see it from afar. Like, no, let me invite you to be a part of that discussion, right? At RD Station, we would have bi-weekly meetings focused on Mexico, focused on Colombia. We would invite, you know, sales reps. We would invite product people. We would invite people that were running actually these functions in Brazil, so they could actually talking about the best in class and talking about the different nuances from a market to market. It's just an aspect of learning and building that empathy and having people understand from that perspective that this was important, right? So the finance team and the HR team, like one of the most important functions when you are expanding to another country, we would actually ensure that they would attend conferences and understand different paying methods and understanding the legal aspects of different countries, so they could build that empathy and understand, oh gosh, it is actually a little bit complicated and it's different from the original country to create a structure in that other place. So I'd say empowerment and gathering people in committees and gathering people to join the conversation rather than just share results, I think is an important part of the process.
So it's really about giving them visibility into what's happening on the ground and building these sharing mechanisms within the organization, so, you know, ideas and learning can cross-pollinate within the company. Just to give, you know, a little simple example, what Flexport did really well was, at least at the GM level, that they had monthly GM calls sharing best practices from local markets. So they ensured that they didn't sort of go about doing it their own way, but actually in a shared way, to the point that made a little bit earlier, help the organization scale a bit more effectively. And so building these sharing mechanisms within the organization is extremely powerful because it builds that alignment and trust within, obviously, the organization as they scale internationally.
And I think recognizing and celebrating when you see a best practice, this comes from Netflix, but I loved actually reading the No Rules Rule book when they say that, you know, Brazil, for instance, had such an interesting way of greeting people before like any meeting. And they thought that that was a best practice that they wanted to apply everywhere, right? So it's something that you can celebrate and people can feel proud of at Endeavor. We had some offices that were much farther ahead than others in programs that really worked on the ground. So how can you celebrate that success, bring someone who created or who's running that program to the stage and actually have them share globally a best practice that came from the ground up? It's not actually the headquarters sharing and saying that you have to do and mandate that. It creates this aspirational aspect that innovation can come from anywhere and you have that ability to be part of that process, right?
Absolutely. The celebration aspect of it, I think, is really important. And really what you're highlighting is a real hallmark of global class companies, and that's facilitating this two-way innovation so that it's not just command and control headquarters saying, this is how you do things. And I like the way you describe that is in how people were invited over, and it's almost like headquarters became an enabler of empathy and empowerment and localization through the process. So much good stuff in what you're sharing. One thing that you've mentioned a few different times in your answers that we'd love you to dig a little bit deeper into is KPIs. And so one of the things that we say is that international is the new agile. And I guess that sounds cool, but there are a lot of reasons we say that because of how the mechanisms of successful international growth tie into some of the mechanisms of agile. For example, in agile, to be successful in an organization, the whole group has to believe in this iterative methodology and has to be sort of bought into that process. And so, one of the elements of agile also is that early on, metrics are different. It's not about profitability. It's about discovering what the right model is and product market fit or something that goes a little farther that we call company market fit. So we'd love for you to talk a little bit about KPIs, how they change over time as an organization is growing and the role that they play in the expansion.
I think something that you mentioned from the agile methodology and it's crucial, and I don't think every company that is expanding globally does effectively establishing KPIs that are unique and different for this project. At RD Station, I would say that we were a startup within a scale-up. RD in Brazil already had 15,000 customers, was already present in the country for 7 years. And there we were, a startup, needing to actually have KPIs that were very specific to our reality. And we did that. We did that successfully. We actually established a playbook, and every single different stage of that playbook, we would have specific KPIs focused on, you know, SaaS, B2B business model that would give us a leading indicator that we were succeeding and we could actually go to the next phase. And they were in particular for the purpose of our extension at RD was focused on, yes, MRR, you know, yes, churn rates, but also the consistency through which we could actually grow those KPIs more so than the absolute number, right? Because if we were comparing the absolute number to numbers from Brazil, we would never consider it successful. We were comparing apples and oranges. So it was much more about the growth rate or the consistency of those numbers than it was about the absolute number. We were investing very much upfront. So that was needed. And then in terms of the awareness, right, and the education of a particular market, I think that having, you know, not only, again, this speaking very focused on a SaaS B2B business model, talking about number of leads or talking about conversion rates, but we learned a ton, I would say, about what was a good conversion rate in Mexico in comparison to Colombia, right? Different markets with different digital penetration and different maturity in terms of digital marketing, which was the focus of RD. So I'd say that it's important to iterate and it's important to actually check back your assumptions constantly and probably even more constantly than you would do if you are already, you know, flying high at a scale-up phase. You were looking for product market fit, quite frankly. I believe that every single market that you launch is a new attempt of reaching product market fit, and you need to be revisiting and understanding whether the KPIs and the baselines that you're going from are the correct ones. And it's okay to fail, but you have to fail fast. Again, going back to the agile methodology, right? I think that embracing failure is one very important aspect of going global and just iterating constantly.
I feel like you're just dropping a lot of nuggets here throughout the call. So really appreciate your time today. And we're moving into the last phase of the conversation. But before we conclude with the three pieces of advice, we also want to dive a little bit deeper into sort of your role as a VC now. And I think Aaron also is curious, but I'm curious to learn a bit more about how your sort of operational experiences at Endeavor and the startup you work for, et cetera, has sort of influenced you as a VC in terms of how you look at companies and when screening, you know, founders and companies overall that you invest in. So how's that experience sort of, you know, impacted you into the looking at the lens of investments?
As I mentioned in the beginning of this conversation, I realized earlier on in my career that whatever I would do, it would be focused on entrepreneurship and economic development. I purposefully focused on operations for a good amount of time in these previous years because I wanted to feel how it was and really dig deeper, you know, into how it is to build a company. That's why I fully agree with you guys that I consider myself an entrepreneur. Every single new office that I worked on and I launched at Endeavor and at RD, I feel that it was my baby there. But I missed the contact with the entrepreneurs. And at heart, I just love supporting founders building global businesses. So going back to Brazil and seeing how the ecosystem, not only in Brazil, but in Latin America, has dramatically changed and how founders are starting to think global from the get-go was one of the very important drivers for my decision to go back to Brazil and go into VC. And now, if possible, I realized that I could play a role in supporting and driving those strategies global from, you know, from the beginning, especially for SaaS business models, right? Or for tech companies that can be global from the beginning. So one of the very interesting learnings that I've had at RD is, look, I don't think every company needs to go global. There's so many markets, you know, and there's so many business models that will work very well and will have a lot of potential in one single market. I don't think that that's a necessity. But whenever I meet a founder that is already aspiring global from the start, focusing on a market first, right? Going step by step, but having that aspiration and wanting to think bigger, quite frankly, it just inspires me. And I think talking about economic development, I think it will play an important role in actually continuing to put Latin America on the spot, right? Like there can be incredible technology coming out from Latin America into the world. So I feel like my role now at Alexia, and Alexia focuses on SaaS and AI and blockchain, all three theses that I think can be global from the get-go. I just hope that I can translate some of those best practices and some of those lessons learned to founders who want to go global. I've been very inspired by the fact that there's just so many now that see this reality. You would only see people in Latin America coming from Argentina and wanting to go global because the market was so small. They kept thinking global from the start. But now you see people from Brazil and from Mexico and Colombia wanting to go global regional. So that's super inspiring and something that I'm very excited to work on in the next years.
Obviously, there are many differences between Brazil and U.S. as markets. But one thing that we found as commonalities, just because of the size, is that often the stage that companies start to think about international is much later. So Klaus is from Danish entrepreneurs know, like, Denmark is too small to create this huge company. So we're going to think global a lot earlier. But for Brazil and for U.S. in particular, it often happens later. I'm curious if you can just offer some perspective that we think really cut across to other markets, investors in other markets, but how can investors be supporters and enablers of international expansion and global growth for the companies that are in their portfolios?
Again, and I want to make sure that I'm clear about this. I would tell some of our portfolio companies, because we focus on early stage, I would say to several of them, don't go global now. But that doesn't mean that you cannot have a roadmap and you cannot have a long-term view that you can be global in some years from now. And I think that that plays an important role in the architecture of your product, let's say. So if you build a company from the beginning, if you build a culture, a mindset, a product that can be global, even if you address a market first, a local market first, I think that you have significant advantage towards other competitors. So I think VCs, of course, we like returns and we like companies that will be, you know, the largest, the most impactful in their industry. So I think VCs, we want to have a long-term view, right? The world I think is large enough, and there is opportunity for many technologies coming from different markets. We've seen that at Endeavor was inspiring to see the decentralization of innovation and of capital, right? With that trend that I think the pandemic only accelerated, we are constantly seeing incredible companies go public or go global from everywhere, from the Middle East, from Southeast Asia, from Latin America, which is growing a ton as a region. So we're seeing more of that. It's already a reality. I think VCs, quite frankly, are now much more bullish on considering that these companies in their portfolio, if they want to actually play a relevant worldwide, they will eventually need to go global, and they need to be mindful about it. So to me, it's just a matter of, look, it's fine. You need to focus. An entrepreneur needs to focus a ton. But it doesn't mean that you cannot go global at a certain point in your roadmap.
Absolutely. And what I love about what you're talking about is this important blend between mindset, but also processes that support it. And one thing this reminds us of is a story that we heard in our research from BlaBlaCar, world's largest carpooling platform, where they thought about multiple markets at the very beginning. So they didn't launch in multiple markets because, as you said, you need to focus. But for them, they're founded in France. They were thinking about the Spanish market from the very beginning, so that certain things about how the French market worked were not hard-coded into their company. You know, not just their product and language, but everything related to team building and such. And so what you're saying is really so important to have that from the beginning, to be mindful of that, so that when you do want to go international, it's a lot easier because you've architected your whole company to support that. So many great things about what you just said.
Yeah, I completely agree. And just to give maybe a Brazilian example, Alessio, the founder of Pipify, he founded the company Acessero back in the day, and that was very much hard-coded for the Brazilian market. And then he visited Israel to kind of get inspiration on how they built global organization, and kind of led him to think about building Pipify in a very, very different way. And now are obviously, you know, having a very much a global organization through Pipify and raised a lot of money. And so those experiences impacted the way he thought about hiring, building structures and processes, building team, building the organizational culture, and obviously are now leading him to be on the path of building a truly global organization. So we completely agree with your sentiment and your comments there. I want to transition over to maybe the final section of today's podcast, which is the three pieces of advice. So imagine you're coming down from the elevator. You have to answer these questions in a very short and concise manner. No pressure at all, maybe just a little bit. Are you ready for the three pieces of advice, Bianca?
Yes.
Awesome. So what one piece of advice would you give to someone interested in building a career around international business?
What is interesting, and I have found throughout my international journey, is the importance of language and the importance of culture. No matter the background that other international expansion leaders have, they appreciate other cultures and they do speak other languages. I think that speaking, I don't know if with technology in the future, all of us are going to have, you know, glasses or earplugs that will make us connect in our own languages and we won't need to speak other languages. I hope that's not the case because I love languages. But I cannot stress enough power of speaking someone's language. When I was starting to work in Latin America as a Brazilian, I just threw myself in and started speaking Spanish, and that made the whole difference. I think that going above and beyond and learning languages and learning about other cultures is the most important aspect, and being empathetic about it is the most important aspect if you want to build a career around it.
Completely agree. It is foundational and fundamental for having that curiosity and learning about other cultures and languages that really help shape you as a leader and the way you view the world as well, because you learn a lot through those conversations in a different language as well. What one piece of advice do you have for a business leader expanding a business to new markets?
Again, I think this comes from my experience with Endeavor and with International Mastermind, and now knowing that you guys have so much knowledge and content around it, search for content and for people who have done it. Look for your tribe. I mean, don't try to reinvent the wheel. There's so many people who have done it already. There are resources. Talk to people. Don't try to go alone about it.
Awesome. We're building the entrepreneurial tribe together with International Mastermind, so you can always reach out to us, of course. What one piece of advice would you have for your younger self?
Probably it's tied to what I've already said, but it's probably I would focus on learning Mandarin or or more languages even. I'm passionate about it. And I think that the more you understand other cultures and other languages, I think that it will, you know, leverage or scale your growth in this career. But I think that would be it.
Bianca, thank you so much for your time. I mean, you said so many amazing things. You know, you talked about the global mindset of people, systems, universalizing core values, agile playbooks, economic development, KPIs, languages and culture appreciation, two-way innovation, headquarters being an enabler, empathy and trust, on and on and on. So thank you so much for sharing. Thank you so much for what you're doing with International Mastermind and really making this a shared experience for global growth. And wish you best of luck as you continue on your entrepreneurial journey.
Thank you, guys. It was really great to be here with you. Hope to continue following your success as well, and appreciate all of the content you're creating around the subject.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Bianca.